Letter.
Oh, yeah, baby.
There is an uneasy standoff between Wittgenstein and Land. One appeals to clarity in the face of perceived casuistry or periphrasis, of which the delirial rhetoric of the other could very easily be said to belong. The latter, however, employs the bewitchment of language very specifically to close down intelligence, if, that is, intelligence is perceived in some way to interrupt what the respondent describes as hyperstition, which is treated here as, this is my Land voice, a positive feedback circuit, including culture as a component. It can be defined as the experimental techno-science of self-fulfilling prophecies. Superstitions are merely false beliefs, but hyperstitions, by their very essence and existence as ideas, function causally to bring about their own reality. My voice. For Land, of course, this provides a setting for his well-known celebration of the absolute deterritorialization of anything that gets in the way of the pure flow of capital, understood in the general sense as a libidinal flexing of ideation as desire, and then as the pure light of information in a moment of techno-gnostic dematerialization. Death, in other words, in simpler words, the death of the human and its progeny.
Redux.
Focusing on sound, affects, and technology, the observation on the alien order of time is interesting in that it raises the question of dissonant temporalities and temporal paradox central to the investigations of the Smazel Research Unit.
The entity dreamed up by Kraftwerk is far more complex and disturbing than the cyborg of popular culture in that, like Hamlet's ghost, it seems to suggest that time is no longer linear or progressive, but decidedly out of joint. In spite of its apparently temporal progression and linearity, and arguably unlike biological life, music is a manifestation of decidedly atemporal metastasis, of a prolific and pre-ontological process of virtualized affect glimpsed through the plane or grid of spatio-temporality in the moment of sonic actualization. Glimpsed, that is, in the event of music as a somatic, nostalgic, projective, and aesthetic intensity. Music is inherently and subjectively spectral, both as a medium and a message, and this connects it in a number of ways with what Deleuze has described as a second synthesis of time, albeit with important qualifications. Music is a very potent, forceful spectral agent in this understanding of everyday experience. We cannot not be subjected to its power over our affects and memories. We are willingly enslaved by it. Not only can it awaken the specters of long-forgotten thoughts and affects, it can also make us act upon them, even if they are entirely imagined. They may have direct reference to subjective or collective experience, but this is by no means a requirement, as they can implant or be implanted at any point via the power of refrain, rhythm, melody, chorus, beat, timbre, tonality, and so on. Music specters, therefore, can be mere fragments of musical experience, as well as unified entities of inscribed musical meaning and appropriation. The sound of music may stir hints of memories or emotions, but it can also move us back, forward, or sideways in time and space, and at least in theory, beyond time and space altogether.
To what extent do we need to involve ourselves in a cult or cultic discourse? We are, after all, dealing with immanent causalities that transect the arrow of time in mid-flight. Notions in which causality is seemingly reversed, so that we are, as listeners, in an earlier technological moment, might place the needle on the groove of Johann Sebastian Bach's Art of Fugue, or flip play on a cassette or CD of the Belleville Three in their first encounter with what was to become known as techno. Or Schoenberg's Faustian mapping of the 12-tone system in Vienna. Excuse me, or Robert Johnson's meeting with the devil outside Clarksdale. And through the act of engaging through technology with the music and sound and silence these moments engendered, cause that music to be composed, to be played for the first time, to come into being.
Developments in music technology have intensified and complicated the inherently spectral dimension of music production and consumption. Recorded sound has evolved a dual signification in the sense that technologically produced, manipulated, or reproduced music simultaneously evokes connotations of system and structure as techne, as well as genesis and structure as implied action or parole, and accordingly, because of its inaccessible causality and fractured mnemonics of the supernatural and the spectral. Any recorded music is a copy of a copy, a simulacrum without an a simulacrum of an imaginary origin and cosmetically engineered uniqueness, a perpetual remix or mashup without an originary model. However, the actual experience of music on the level of subject and affect indicates otherwise, for the simple reason that the sonic simulacrum is the product of a dream of infinite exchangeability, whereas every direct reception of musical experience is necessarily unique and hence phantasmatic, and hence, by virtue of an origin without an origin, spectral. The tension between the sensual or intellectual immediacy of music and the distancing and simulative or reproductive power of technology on the one hand, and the economics of the phantasm in the simulacrum on the other, this four-way relationship does in fact generate a certain balance and stability via what Graham Harman calls tool being. The imaginal energies that enable creativity and its effective reception in the listener require the order of instrument and instrumentation to emerge at all. The power of music requires, demands even, the machinery of expression as a medium of its transmission, from imagination to imagination, from body to body.
This is audiation as a form of seance, in a fashion as a kind of possession, but one in which agency, the agency of the listener, appears to equal that of the creator. The creator of a particular set of sounds in temporal space, even though that putative origin is ostensibly buried in history. Lost to presence in any meaningful sense, and what of music or sound or noise or even silence from the distant future? Can we access this via technologies to come? And if so, how would causation work from that future to our present? Or can those agencies from the future access us in the moment of creation or composition or collaging, for example? As we arrange our fingers to make the first chord change, or set our machines in motion above a dance floor, or in the broader sonic imperium of our emergent neural web world.
There is a perpetual ambiguity in the way in which messages, sounds, or musical notes, rhythms, or refrains from the past are seemingly conveyed through recording technologies, from analog scratchings on manuscripts or digital codings on MP3s, and their consumptions by listeners. So, and in a manner parallel to the time out of joint of Hamlet's father's ghost, we are caught in a temporal and auditive loop in which the moment of composition or performance and the moment of reception or absorption both have and do not have an origin and exist or rather subsist in a spectral space distinct from that attached to linear temporalities. The moment in which Bach raises his quill to ink the first few notes of the Art of Fugue is before us, ahead of us, and co-determinous with us, at the same time as it persists as a virtuality to be actualized through the event of listening. And, we are arguing here, it is delivered to us by specters who are, and simultaneously, both vehicles of transition and memory, and indeed of rememoration, and agents as well as agencies of sonic events themselves.
Smazel evolved, at least in one incarnation, between Utrecht and London in 2008 to investigate precisely these issues. Presentations were given and papers written, and rather unfortunately delayed publications. But since then, the socio-cultural web has changed enormously. And roving into our nearby future spaces and those dislocated from conventional temporal or territorial coordinates has catalyzed our return to the original Smazel diagram and its associated demonotechnics.
The spectrality and hauntology of recorded sound are actualized by a number of technological agents. As technological forms of ventriloquism, sound recordings thwart listeners' desultory intuitions regarding sonic embodiment. The schizophrenic voices of speakers and amplifiers, record players and telephones bring forth phantom sounds whose origin is no more physical than electricity and digital sound bites. Music recording is dehumanized rewriting. Recording and replaying sound, and especially voice, means disconnecting live sound from its origin, thereby making it unlive while it's also undead. Smazel theorizes the network nature of machine-made music and the spectral phenomenology of that network. The human, non-human, musical and non-musical actors involved in machine-made music are represented in our model by the roles of singer, microphone, amplifier, speaker, and listener. These are allegorical possibilities. They are replaceable by any other musical actor. For now, we work with this. The voices of these actors may be biological or phantom voices. When they sound, that is, when the singer starts singing, or when the microphone transmits her voice, or when the speakers are switched on, etc., they engender a time-space that is defined by its medial phenomenology. Medial time-space is the media-induced and media-confined time and space that exists between divergent actors. Here, for instance, are the medial spaces in which the singing actor and Smazel can be involved, but obviously all these actors each are in their own, have their own sort of sets of medial time spaces. As Derrida has argued, technology produces around it a darkness of non-iterability. It almost obsessively highlights the ontological void of non-referentiality behind any attempt at reference. This void is an a-signifying abyss that is simultaneously the preface to and the undoing of signification. When media are switched on, they endorse the transgression of messages from this abyss, and thus medial time-space comes into being. Here, the ghosts that are virtual in this ontographical void resonate into actuality with every utterance. Every note or nuance, every beat or blip is an event. Accordingly, and as a result of the process of musical mediation, all that can ever be transmitted from this source in audible sound is the inaudible revenants and precursors of musical experience. Through the spectrality that is imminent to technological reproduction, the medial time spaces in between actors thus become haunting. Haunting time spaces are virtual planes in which origin and referentiality are absent, and from which spectral voices emerge. They are planes of immanence and of composition. They are planes of immanence because they allow the aforementioned revenants of musical meaning to emerge. And they are planes of composition because each musical sounding leads to recontextualization, reinscription, and the recreation of old and new specters. Haunting time spaces are characterized by temporal paradox. They are arraigned by the conflated chronologies of performative time, ontological dislodgement, and the durée of lost memory time. Inevitably, ghosts emerge from these skewed temporalities. Operated by the demonotechnics of music, mnemonics, and mnemomusics, human and non-human specters emerge. Sorry for that. In haunting time space, the medium specters accumulate and meet with the singers as well as the listener specters. Since these specters are imminent to the actors present in the Smazel network, they meet through cybernetics. The specters that roam the machine meet those that are projected by the human unconscious, and as these ghosts refer mnemonically and effectively to past, present, and future, the spectrality of the musical man-machine can be as old as the La Mettrie and as new as a digital avatar.
The hyperstitial implications of Smazel are as evident as they are destructive. Sonosophy combined with demonotechnics, the cybernetic craft of evoking and invoking transtemporal demons to momentarily substantiate media. Multi-temporal media exceeds temporal paradox. They disclose the fact that neither time nor reality ever existed except at the moment of sonic or solar enunciation. Hyperstition is in this sense merely one form of demonotechnics, and one that we would place second to hypostition. Here the prefix hypo rather than hyper indicates a stealth in its beneathness. Hyper and hypo generate a new series of critical interventions in the sonic metaverse, which transect vertical hierarchies of both sound and judgment, and certainly of sound and judgment, as they themselves are based on strictures of temporal ascension. Hyper in this sense is lost in the self-fulfilling prophecies that it relies on for justification as technique, whereas hypo strips this discourse of its defensive semantic carapace and reveals the sonic viscera beneath. Hyperstition becomes a security system to be breached via hypostitional tunneling. We are as Kafka's moulds burrowing beneath the surface of rationality, as in my forehead, that unique instrument from Kafka's The Burrow. There is an element in hypostitional thinking which requires possession by para or non-temporal agencies. Lovecraft's old ones in the case of Land, or early to mid-period Reza Negrestani. And such possession from the future or distant past or somewhere outside the circuit of anthropic or even geological time, somewhere close to abysmal time. On the other hand, this may be just the bewitchment of language operating in the negative sense implied by Wittgenstein, rather than the positive way implied by Land. Maybe Smazel can close this particular circuit or open up to new forms of post-hypostitional clarity. For if hypostition is in some sense imminent to itself, hypostition is imminent only to its own vanishing, to its occult flight from the bewitchment of language, which forms patterns on the carapace of time, to the sonic viscera beneath. The writer Cameron Bain has noted, for example, the appeal of the occult lies not in that it is ostensibly grants entry to a hidden truth, but precisely in that it doesn't.
But what is hidden must remain hidden is at the core of all occult systems, and they always contain internally consistent means of refuting that their hidden truth is hidden, because it is, in fact, non-existent.
Elder.
The recent work of Fatima al-Kabira. The recent work of Fatima al-Kadira, released on Hyperdub, is an example. "I believe in jinns," she says in a recent interview. "I believe in evil spirits that haunt the earth. I don't smell them or see them, but I feel them, especially in Kuwait." She goes on to describe a moment similar to those we mentioned in our abstract, this time the invasion of Kuwait by Saddam's forces on the 2nd of August 1990. "Here is a young girl watching Japanese cartoons translated into Arabic, and suddenly this decidedly postmodern moment, so redolent of the era, splutters into another when a flickering black and white photo of Saddam appears on the screen and everything changes. Kuwait in her eyes becomes a Blade Runner set, but one veined with other aspects of popular culture, history, mythology, nation and identity, economics and sonics. The interest here for Smazl is not merely the electronic agency evident in her soundscapes, but its contextualization, both sonically and culturally, and through the projected semiotic ghost of the artist herself. All three replayed as a hyperstitional exploration of national identities and mythologies, particularly around the notion of an imagined China."
Smazl analysis discloses the cracks in the texture of hyperstition. It allows the specters, revenants, spirits, and phantoms that inhabit the outside sound, a great outdoors, that can only be thought as a pre-Heideggerian nothing or a Lovecraftian audient void. Smazl analysis allows these precursors of musical being to emerge from their burrows. These specters never did bear any relation to word, to reality, or to hyperstition. Flickering in and out of audition through the echoing vaults of hypostition, they offer occult snippets of temporal paradoxes and effective engineerings that never were.
Futurist as well as elder.
Sonic hypostition is the leakage of sound.
Both temporal and extemporaneous.
From an absolutely extimate time space.
The orbiting makes itself heard.
Again. Thank you.
Yeah.
Well, I guess I would just like to hear you elaborate a little more on how you understand the difference between hyperstition and hypostition, because that was happening kind of fast.
Yeah.
As hard to catch.
So, there's a lot of slippage in the term hyperstition, but there is a sense that it emerged from CCRU 20 years ago. With a particular agenda, and it depends where you take it from. But if you take it from, say, Nick Land's particular perspective, it is actually capitalist, as you suggested. It's, to my mind anyway, it's associated with a particular neoliberal vision of the breach of our reality by future capital flooding in and transforming our libidinal urges into a new kind of economy, which is about the disappearance of the human, but not in a way that I actually personally find productive. So hyperstition, the idea was like to go underneath, to burrow underneath this particular thing. It's playing around with the kind of spatial imagery of hyper and hypo, I guess, to some extent, but also connecting with the very enigmatic way in which Kafka uses burrowing in his work.
Well, there's that.
Yeah, there's that.
The
and
thing, obviously, the collaboration is very weird between us. Charlie's a philosopher and delirious. And I'm a musicologist and OCD, right? This is how we work together. So we sort of explode in certain ways, and then he becomes delirious and I become OCD, and we sort of get to something. So he starts from philosophy, I start from musicology. Musically, hyperstition, to my mind, only works if you start thinking about something quite bland and banal as musical meaning. Musical meaning quite obviously doesn't exist, it's only musical appropriation, right? And hyperstition, as in Land's definition of, you know, fiction becoming reality, whether that's libidinal or economic or capitalist, is always about signification sort of spilling over itself, right? Hypo, in that sense, undermines the whole idea that there ever was any kind of fiction, any kind of signification, right? Because the sounds that then make up music, they come from somewhere else, they never meant anything, they never will mean anything, right? So I think, and in our weird clash that our collaboration is, is where we ended up was basically saying that in hypostition, that hypostition helps us conceptualize a temporality that is always contemporary, so that time becomes contemporary to itself, right? This is then where we, from our readings, ended up, I think, in the middle. Is that what, would you?
That certainly, I mean, to me that raises the question of the outside, and this is a debate we keep on having. Because to talk about demonotechnics suggests there's something outside coming in, possibly. But, and the configuration of outside and inside, I think, is a real issue. And clearly using the kind of metaphors, if they are metaphors of hyper and hyperstition, then we have to explore that further. But I mean, that's part of what the project's all about, you know, basically, to just explore these concepts. And it's about affective engineering, that's in the title as well, and we didn't talk about that because it wasn't time. But I mean, affect has two main denotations here. Affect has a kind of emotional and the Deleuzean version, which is stripped of subjectivity and emotion itself, isn't it? So yeah, it is partly about that as well. It's about affective engineering, I guess. Hypostition. Does that make any sense?
Hyper or hypo?
Hypo.
Okay.
I mean, I suppose hypostition
well,
is
no,
also.
Hypostition
yeah.
as well.
Yeah, I guess
yeah.
I guess
I would
two.
Say.
So can you distinguish between those two versions of affective engineering and the hyper and the hypo? And then maybe also, if hypostition is a coincidence intensification, then is hypo the opposite of that?
How does it work in terms of coincidence? Well, it doesn't necessarily. It denies the possibility, I guess, of coincidence.
Okay.
So, yeah.
What, hypo?
Well, maybe you disagree with me on this. I don't know.
It denies the possibility. Yes, no, I do.
No,
yeah. Sorry,
okay.
Yes.
I think we agree on that one,
didn't
we?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is this,
it's irrelevant, really, isn't it?
I suppose.
Can I ask it's a naive question, but I think it's one that, you know, certainly Harman comes up against and Nigristani, which is the relationship. So I cannot agree with you more about the vapid definition of musical meaning. But I mean, as a quasi-practicing non-musician, that I could not agree with you more. And yet, I wonder if what's difficult to trace between, in the 30 seconds I've had to contemplate hyperstition, is this problem between of an ontological register and epistemological register. Because to me, what the hyperstition evokes is a way of, is an ontology that allows for meaning to be meaningless, but still to function meaningfully, if you will. And so, I guess what so to me, an ontology that denied that in advance would have to then explain, actually, have to explain the phenomenon of fiction, if you will, right? Which is to say reality. But is that a coherent question?
It is. Well, in that sense,
I read hyperstition very differently.
Okay,
I guess. What did you say again? Hyperstition.
It is great. This oral information.
Yeah. Yes. You don't know whether
this is a deliberate attempt at infection. You should probably realize that.
No, it's you said hyperstition is an ontology.
Hypostition strikes me as an ontological argument, right? And so the question is, how then would how in a hypostitional, if I can say, reading, which I'm having a tough time doing, how does one explain the emergence of fictions, which is to say these meanings that are denied but have to be denied? And this isn't a subjective argument.
I think
kind of
hypo is great because, to me anyway, it takes agency away from fiction, whereas hyperstition gives fiction a lot of agency.
Mm-hmm.
And I, to be frank, I just don't really buy that. That was that it's words. That's about signification, and that I want to undermine.
It's not about affect? Like you don't think there's
affect is a different story, isn't it? Yeah.
Well, you could argue that hypostition is ontologizing hyperstition. Is that what you?
Yeah, in a sense, I guess. Yeah.
I mean, could we argue that there is a process where that's happening, and it's being refictionalized by hyperstition in some sense?
Yes, exactly.
But I mean, the whole point about re-ontologizing is actually quite crucial here, and that's why we use the Wittgenstein in the beginning. You know, it's the bewitchment of language again, isn't it?
Mm.
Where does it actually take us? I mean, this is what we're trying to set up here, I guess.
And you know, Charlie, what's weird actually, we haven't spoken about this, but when we were doing Smassel, we were talking about ontology, and suddenly with hyperstition we're talking about ontology. We have an
idea. That's true. Yeah, that's true. And yeah, we've made that transition without realizing it.
Oh, that's
weird. That's weird.
Teleological, almost.
It's something from the future.
Clearly.
The old ones.
The old ones, yeah. You can't get away from them, can you?
They're still to come.
Still to come, yeah. So anyway, people make that slippage and start accidentally saying hyperstition rather than hyperstition, then it would have worked.
And it won't have been us.
Or
it
you, just,
be
listen,
us,
you just hear it as that.
Yeah. It's like you and the stuff you were doing yesterday, you're talking about mishearings and mispronunciations and so on. These are all ways in which Dimona Techniques intervenes in the moment of enunciation in some form.
But I wonder, sorry, here's the whatever symbolic gesture. are the temporal dynamics different, or do you see the temporal dynamics different between hyper and hypostition? Because like hyperstition seems to be very retroactive,
mm-hmm.
like in fictions that become real,
mm-hmm.
so they have to at some point become real in order
mm-hmm.
for you to say that they were hyperstitions
mm-hmm.
in some way. Although you can try and posit them, if they don't become real, then they're not hyperstitions.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. There's that point you made about cause and cause. I can't remember, is that
yeah,
phrase
yeah,
there,
sure.
but you know,
yeah.
how a cause is different after the effect has taken place
yeah.
in the thought. Yeah, you're stuck in a kind of cognitive loop when you ask that kind of question.
Well, is like
when
hypo the cause?
And the hypo, which we try to get away from that, from really any sort of temporality.
But then again, we
do
talk about temporality, so that's not entirely fair.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we say it's extemporaneous.
Yeah. Yeah. Trying to get away from it. I know.
Trying to get away from time, really.
From the loop.
Yeah.
I mean, for you and for me. I mean, you're musicology. I'm thinking philosophically, maybe. I guess.
Yeah.
I mean, it's that thing, that image of the future that's haunting me. You know,
it
the
is,
future as a mirror.
Yeah.
As a mirror, that every time you look into the future, you just see the past. And we all seem to be caught in a loop, and hyperstition as a concept captures that idea of the loop, that we can't get any further, we're stuck. So we're trying to burrow under it, you know, and I guess that's how we're trying to do it. To actually see how that pattern of causality works. I mean, you know, what you're saying makes sense.
So it's more of an analytical framework then, or?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think that's what we're...
Basically, that's what,
yeah.
To understand the cybernetic kind of process by which these things become.
Yeah, that's what Smassel started out as.
Yeah.
Really, just the Smassel diagram is exactly that. We started with, obviously, with Latour. It's a Latour sort of network.
It was original.
And then, so we did the sort of social analysis, but because, you know, media don't quite fit with an ANT thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then music does a little bit more because it is temporarily so problematic and effectively problematic. So that's why we came up with Smassel.
Yeah.
And then we clashed that with hyperstition and hypostition was born.
Various other things, yeah. I don't know what the role of the tour is in this.
Especially with the operations, we were talking about how Wittgenstein posit this as being a negative operation and Land posit this as being a positive operation. Exactly in the extemporaneous status, just as one property of this, you're to be extemporaneous or to be non-temporal or anything like that, either would posit itself as a negative and would have that that oscillation back and forth depending on your reading through Wittgenstein or through through the latter Wittgenstein or through through Land. So if you could elaborate a little bit more on. What you think the logical operations you're doing or conducting, even amongst yourselves, actually,
mm-hmm.
In producing this.
What, musically or philosophically?
Or just diegetically, just how you're describing this.
Mm-hmm. What exactly is
the extemporaneous, what leaping out of time.
But just
out of time.
If you want to focus on that property or if you want to focus on Smassel in general, it doesn't...
In relation to the Wittgenstein land.
Or the positive and negative... logical patterns you wish, or the in-between?
It is an in-between. I don't know, is it a position of advocacy or not? I'm not sure.
Yeah, you have a different...
I did this morning.
Huh?
A different view.
No, you do this differently than I, don't you? You fight different demons.
Yes, I do. That's true. Was Wittgenstein a demon, or that?
No.
He'd like to be. I haven't got a clear answer to that. Maybe you have. I don't know. What do you think?
I would take clear, like, all
you know
the way.
What?
I
maybe
have to take a lot more time.
Maybe there
yes.
also isn't a clear answer to that because I guess the way we work is all about clashing. It's almost, you know, like...
It's not about explanation.
No, and also not about a narrative. That's why we structured the paper as we did.
But even constructing it, just saying it's not about something, would even be a negative operation. Sorry,
right,
so
okay.
I see what you mean.
Yeah.
Strictly
so
speaking.
I'm,
yeah.
So I'm just, at least clarity for me.
Yeah.
This seat.
Like, we're wandering to the realms of Laravel now, I think. This is almost like non-smazzle.
Is hypostition a way of, okay, so it's an analytical framework, but does that then leverage the capacities of hypostition then to operate in other ways, in new ways? So is it a kind of, are they kind of co-productive of each other in that sense? Like,
yeah.
There's
yeah,
a ground that the analytical kind of framework that allows then for other modes of hypostition?
Exactly. Well, it's a creation of new tools in a classic Deleuzian sense, I guess. I mean, it's not saying that hypostition is necessarily bad.
And in a certain way, it also undermines hypostition.
But, what that turns it into, who knows?
Yeah.
I mean, it doesn't mean it's just trying to destroy it.
We don't know that.
Or is a mode of retroactively identifying the effectiveness of a particular hyperstition in order to then re...
Hyperstition or hypo?
Hyper. Hypo as a mode of retroactively, examining the kind of...
Examining,
the effects that a particular hyperstition has had on a particular field.
Examining them maybe forensically, but without judgment, put it that
way.
And then dismantling them and putting them together again in an effective sense, rather than necessarily a conceptual sense, but the conceptual arises out of the effective.
Yeah.
Maybe, but again,
we had this discussion, I'm really, really anal, but I find hyperstition theory just very, sometimes very flimsy and fluffy.
Hyper.
Right,
yeah.
And I wanted to just, I guess, understand hyperstition better and how it's constructed. And that's why needed that basis to see what it consists of. So I don't think you can really see them as separate from each other. Really, does that make sense?
Yeah.
But
I
again,
that's
really
doing,
just because I'm anal.
It's a bit like Laurel and Hardy, but which is which?
Oh, we are. Yeah.
I think we better go to the last talk.
That was
the segue. Hopefully, I'll get to
yeah, exactly. So thank you.
Thank you.